We are going to start with me taking you guys back with me about 25 years ago. So some of you, you can't go back that far. I get that. But you can still listen to the story and hopefully appreciate it. So Rachel and I got married about 25 years, a little bit over 25 years ago now. And when we got married, I was 22 years old. Rachel was 20 years old. And we came into the relationship with the assets that could fit in the back of my car when I drove from Canada to Ohio. And Rachel came into it with, I don't remember the year, but it was a Ford Focus. And these are two really junky cars, and a TV and some clothes and some other stuff like that. And that was kind of the start of our time together. I tell you this because the cars is what I want to focus on for a quick second. So just so you can understand how unreliable these cars were, with the Ford Focus that we had, or Ford Tempo, I'm sorry, the Ford Tempo that we had, after the first like 3 or 4 years that we had this vehicle, I became so good at changing the starter in it that I could do it in about 20 or 25 minutes. And it was a yearly process because the oil that dripped from the engine went over the starter and would short it out and wreck the starter. So like every year I had to replace the starter, which was actually an okay thing because it was still under warranty as long as it was within 12 months. So it didn't cost us anything but the 20 minutes or so that it took to install this starter. So not the most reliable vehicles in the world. Once we've been married for a few years, we were able to purchase a used vehicle to us, the first kind of new vehicle to us, and it was a Chevy Cavalier Z24, and we loved this car. It had a spoiler on the trunk, right? Like this is a fun car, and this car seemed reliable as we first got it. But then as we had it longer and longer, it had this own issue of its own that we discovered that as you would drive it for any period of time and it really got warmed up, the issue was if you had to come to a stop after that, it would die. And then it would leave you just sitting there for maybe 20 to 30 minutes until it cooled down. And then you could restart it, and you could go again. And this was just the process with this car that we discovered. And the way one of the times that we had this happen actually was when we were crossing the border into Canada visiting my family, and we got up to the gate. And as we pulled up to the border crossing to talk to the agent, the car just died. And the guy's like, "Did your car just die?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Give me a second." And he gets on his phone or his radio or whatever, and all of a sudden, like, 3 or 4 border guys come over, and they just push our car through over to the side of the road, and they leave. And then we're like, "Wow, that's an interesting way of getting across customs." Like, they didn't check any ID. They didn't do nothing. They were just like, push him into Canada. Canada's problem. So we've had these cars that have some issues with them that have certainly left us stranded at times. But then we've also had other cars that are really good cars, and you begin to like trust that vehicle. Like you think that when you go outside to start it, it's going to start, and you think that when you drive it somewhere, it's actually going to take you where it's supposed to. And most of the time, they do just that. But it's when those vehicles choose not to that we begin to lose our trust in them, lose our faith in them, right? Like with the junky ones that we started out with, we didn't have much faith in those. Those were not cars that we were taking on long trips. When we went on long trips, we rented cars because we didn't trust that one. We didn't have faith that that vehicle would get from point A to point B in our lives. And there's a lot of things in life that are like that, that we have faith in until it fails us, or until it fails us numerous times. The weatherman, right? Like, we all tune into the weatherman, and we like to think that what he's going to say or she's going to say is going to be accurate, but we all know that it may or may not. So we don't have great faith in what we're told in regards to the 18 inches of snow we're supposed to get. We just don't have great faith in that. We're like, "Well, we'll see what happens." And that's how we do it. Because they fail us sometimes. Sometimes they nail it, but other times they fail. And that expectation isn't met, so our faith in them and the process that they use to determine what's going to take place in the weather, we no longer have faith in. I share these with you, these ideas, these concepts with you, because I want to challenge us as believers in Jesus Christ to be careful with who and what we put our faith into. Because people and things are going to let us down. That's just all there is to it. There's not a person or a thing that won't eventually let you or I down. As we've been looking at the life of Jesus Christ over the last 8 weeks now, today we're going to focus on what Jesus says about faith during his 3 years of ministry. And during his 3 years of ministry, it's kind of interesting, at least I think it's interesting, that there's really three different categories of faith that Jesus talks about during those 3 years of ministry. And if you're taking notes, here are all your notes for the whole message today. There's nothing on the screen. You can just write these down and you've got where we're going. But these are the three things that Jesus talks about in regards to faith. Jesus speaks of those who have no faith, no faith at all. He speaks of those with little faith. And then in the rare occasion, and I mean rare occasion, he speaks of those who have great faith. So that's where we're going today. We're looking at what Jesus has to say about no faith, about little faith, and about great faith. And we're going to start with no faith. I'm going to have you turn in your Bibles to the book of Mark, chapter 4. If you're using one of the church Bibles, it's under the chair in front of you. It's going to be page 710. Mark chapter 4, you're going to find yourself on verse 39 is where we'll pick up. But before we get there, I'm going to set the scene just a little bit. So Jesus has been teaching by the lake, by the lake shore, standing in a boat to do this. And he's been teaching using stories that are called parables that we see all throughout the Gospels. And by evening, Jesus was alone with his disciples and he was explaining the meaning of the parables to them. And it was getting late, and Jesus said that they needed to get to the other side of the lake, so they got in the boat and they set across the Sea of Galilee. Now, as they're on the Sea of Galilee, a fierce and violent storm comes up suddenly. The Sea of Galilee, interestingly enough, is the lowest freshwater lake on earth, and it's nestled between like four huge steep hills. And it's said that when the winds come off of these hills, because of the way it's all situated, that it can cause waves of up to 10 feet right there on this freshwater lake. So it was one of those storms that Jesus and his disciples found themselves in. And Jesus was sleeping in the back because he's a great sleeper, and the storm wasn't bothering him one bit. And the disciples got scared, and they went and they woke up Jesus. This is where we pick up in verse 39. So look at the conversation here, starting at verse 39 of our passage. It says, he got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. And then verse 40, he said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? So Jesus got up from his nap and went right to work, right? Like, he didn't say anything to his disciples. He didn't jump in and start help bailing water out or trying to figure out the rigging lines and making sure that they were all safe and having the storm. No, he got up, he looked around, he told the wind and the waves to cut it out, and they listened. Now just think about that for a minute. Like, I know that most of us in here have probably heard and read, maybe even studied this before. But just think about this moment, right? Jesus told the storm to quit, and it obeyed. Imagine what that must have been like to be there. Imagine the chaos of a wild thunderstorm, right? In this little boat that was flying up and down in the waves. A second later, Mark describes the scene as completely calm. I imagine that everyone on that boat, while this storm is taking place, right? Like they were yelling over top of each other. They were shouting instructions to each other to help each other so that they don't end up capsizing and all dying. I can imagine just this chaotic scene taking place. And then all of a sudden it stopped. Just stopped dead in its tracks. It was like it had never happened. At that moment, there was probably nothing but like this gentle lapping of water up against the boat's hull. So from raging chaos to lapping water. And everybody stared at Jesus as he kind of surveyed the results of his command. Then he turned to them, his disciples, and he asked them, "Why are you afraid?" I like, there's another translation that puts it this way. It says, "Why are you cowardly?" That's a legitimate translation of the word. And given Jesus' tone here, it may be the better translation. I think Jesus was kind of reprimanding his disciples for fearing the storm more than God. And then listen to his follow-up question, right? Do you remember what his follow-up question was? Do you still have no faith? Do you still have no faith? I think the question here becomes, and this is one that different theologians and interpreters have wrestled with for centuries, but the question becomes, why exactly was Jesus, I'm going to use the word, reprimanding them? I don't have a definitive answer for you on that one this morning, but I'll share with you two thoughts that I've read. The first thought is this, that Jesus was reprimanding them for not believing in him. He was with them, and he was the Lord of the seas. Remember, Jesus hadn't stilled the seas before this time, but he had revealed himself to them that they should have understood more fully who he was. But they didn't. So that's one possibility. Second, and this takes things in a slightly different direction maybe, is Jesus was reprimanding them for trusting more in themselves than in him. They were trying on their own ways to fight the storm when they had one with them that could command the storm and it would obey. They needed to learn to turn their faith faster to Jesus instead of making him the last resort. I think these two thoughts certainly are not identical in any way. But at the root of each is Jesus pointing out to the disciples that they don't understand who he is yet. And that, I think, is what the story is really about. The story is about Jesus, about who Jesus is. It's about establishing the fact that he really was fully God and fully man. But the disciples still didn't fully grasp that. They didn't fully grasp it and wouldn't until after the resurrection, but they did at least know he was a whole lot more powerful than they dare imagine after this experience. See, you don't fear the storm. You fear the one who can command the storm to stop and it obeys. It's a healthy fear. When we face storms in our lives, when life seems overwhelming, when life is going great and everything's just falling into place perfectly, right? There's two sides to life. When we're in either one of those, do we have faith in Jesus? Faith seems to be an important characteristic in Jesus' mind for us as followers. Jesus desired his disciples to have faith in him. And that the situation was under control. And that their lives were not in danger or in harm. as Jesus sees how you and I live our lives, would it make him question if we have any faith at all? That's what he questioned his disciples. Is there an area in your life today that you find yourself just like frantically bailing the water out of the boat instead of turning to Jesus with complete faith that he can protect you through the storm, or he can end the storm altogether? So first we see Jesus speaking of no faith. We also see Jesus speaking of little faith. I'm going to have you turn to Matthew chapter 17, verse 20 for this. Just back a few pages, be page 695. And again, just setting the scene a little bit as you're turning there, Jesus and his disciples were traveling and they got to the foot of the mountain and a huge crowd was there waiting for him, and a man came and fell at Jesus' feet and told him that his son was possessed with a demon and he had brought the boy to the disciples for healing, but they couldn't drive the demon out. And in the story, just before we pick up, you can see that Jesus is a little bit irritated with his disciples, I would say. Pretty much he's stating that he didn't know how much longer he was going to have to put up with them. Then Jesus said, "Bring me the boy." They brought the boy to Jesus, and he rebuked the demon, and it went out of the boy. A little later on, the disciples asked Jesus why they couldn't heal the boy, and we find Jesus' answer to them in Matthew 17, verse 20, where he says, Jesus replied, "Because you have so little faith." Because you have so little faith. New Living Translation says, "You don't have enough faith." The King James Translation says, "Because of your unbelief." Jesus says, "Your faith is not strong enough. You've been with me. You know who I am by now. Like you've seen the miracles that have taken place. Yet your faith is still not strong enough. You still want to grow on, or to go on your own and to do things your own way." These men had obviously tried to drive the demon out with their own strength. They had not depended on their faith in Jesus Christ to accomplish the task. Too often as believers today, I think we fit into the category of little faith. We realize that we need Jesus for our salvation. We get that part. We accept what he did for us on the cross, but he doesn't need to be a part of our lives other than that. Jesus is for Sunday mornings. But the rest of the time, we can make it on our own. Too often the thinking is, Jesus may be able to save me, but that's all that I need him for. And deep down, we really don't believe that he wants to be involved in our day-to-day lives, and we place our faith in other things. Things like our jobs, our family, our friends, our relationships, our money, right? Even material things. We work much harder at our relationships with others, our jobs and our families and acquiring things, sometimes than we do on our relationship with Jesus. That little bit of faith, it'll save us. But little faith keeps us from being all that we can be in Jesus. Little faith restricts how God can use us to fulfill the purpose of our existence, to glorify God. Little faith believers just exist for themselves and never allow God to use them in the way that he wants. We move from no faith to little faith, and from there we can move into great faith. Now, it's interesting because as we keep going in this passage, Jesus seems to contradict himself here in the very next verse in Matthew chapter 17, right? He had just told his disciples that the reason that they were unsuccessful was because of their little faith or their unbelief. And then he says this, continuing in verse 21. He says, I tell you the truth, if you had faith even as small as a mustard seed, you could say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it would move. Nothing would be impossible. Jesus had just rebuked them for little faith, and then he tells them that if they have faith as small as a mustard seed, they can move a mountain. Like, what's up with that? That certainly seems contradictory to me. I believe Jesus is using the mustard seed analogy as kind of a starting point. He had told them about the mustard seed back in chapter 13 of the book of Matthew. This is what he said about the mustard seed in chapter 13, verses 31 and 32. He told another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it was the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds can come and perch in it and its branches. I think he's reminding them that this small faith that they have, it can do what? It can flourish. Just like a mustard seed can become big and grand and great, he's saying that if they will allow it to grow like a mustard seed, there's no limits to what God can do through them. So we have no faith, we have little faith. Now I want us to look at the idea of great faith. Jesus doesn't talk a whole lot about people with great faith during his ministry. We're going to end our time this morning looking at one of the times that he recognizes somebody with great faith, and that comes from the book of Matthew chapter 8. So you're just going back a few more pages. And this is a story of a Roman soldier who had a servant that he must have greatly cared about, right? Like this servant was in terrible pain and was paralyzed. And he went to Jesus and told him about it. And Jesus said, okay, I'll come with you and we'll heal him. And the soldier told Jesus that he was not worthy of Jesus even entering his house, but that he had faith that if Jesus would just speak the word, his servant would be healed. He said, I know this because I believe that you have the power and authority over everything. Like, just say the words, Jesus. I believe that you can do it. When Jesus heard this, look at what he said. Start at verse 10, right? Matthew 8, verse 10. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed and said to those following him, truly I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith. Great faith believes that Jesus has authority and power and can do miraculous things. Great faith is more than a Sunday morning faith. Great faith is a faith that guides us each and every day, each and every hour of the day. Our faith is great when we believe that Jesus has authority and power over all aspects of our lives. Our faith can move from as small as a mustard seed and grow into the greatest plant in the garden if we just accept the fact that Jesus has all authority. That we can depend on him in all aspects of our lives, not just a little bit on Sunday mornings. I think it's Tim Collins, if I remember right, wrote a book, Good to Great. And it forever has stuck in my mind, one of the ideas, and this is not a quote from the book, but one of the ideas in the book is that good actually gets in the way of great, right? Because we experience something good, so we become satisfied with that. We become okay with that instead of reaching for what's great. And sometimes I wonder if that same concept maybe plays into our lives as believers here sometimes, right? We become okay with, satisfied with little faith, and that gets us in the way of being people of great faith. We can see this morning that Jesus, he had much to say about this idea of faith and the importance of faith. His desire was and is that we as his followers will have faith and grow.